it was the first real sound that had ever been transmitted to a human ear by electricity.
Everyone, and welcome to episode 13 of The Music Dissectors, recorded August 4th, 2018. I'm your host, David Holloway, and as always, I have my esteemed co-host, Matthew J.C. Powell. How are you, Matthew?
I'm feeling very esteemed today, or perhaps poached.
Poached? As long as you're not scrambled.
As long as I'm not scrambled, no.
So it's been a while again. I feel like I'm constantly saying this in the introductions to our podcast, but it has been sort of late May since we released one, and it's just life getting in the way. Not a lack of guests, not a lack of interest. It's just life. Damn that life.
And we are very, very superstitious, and we've been afraid of doing the 13th episode in case this is the one that finally does us in.
That's right. And so to bring us luck, we thought we'd choose an album that has been certainly lucky for its creators, and a great album
to
be.
Can't go wrong with the Eagles.
Can't go wrong with the Eagles. And so, yeah, we're really pleased this episode to have Debbie Kruger on, who is a journalist, writer, music blogger from the US, and you'll hear a lot more of Debbie in a sec. And she has a real passion for both A, the Eagles, and B, the Hotel California album, which comes through really strongly. So, yeah, let's have a listen to Debbie Kruger. Hi, Debbie. Thanks so much for joining us. I think the hours are better for you there than they are for us at the moment.
What time is it there?
Oh, it's not too bad. I mean, it's rock and roll morning, so it's 11:14 in the morning. I can't really complain.
But it is a Saturday. I mean, come on.
That's true.
Yeah, no, it's Friday evening, and it's pretty hot here in Santa Monica, California.
Excellent. And as listeners will be well and truly aware, after a couple of sentences, you're maybe not as Australian sounding as me, as you mentioned when we first started talking, but you're obviously from Australia. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you get up to and why you're now based in the US?
Yeah, well, I'm a Sydney girl who spent a lot of years living in Byron Bay, and I came up through journalism. I was a writer for Variety in Sydney and London for some years back in the 80s. And then I went into publicity, PR, and I did a lot of different stuff, but I guess my key roles that people knew me for in the industry was heading communications for APRA, and doing all the APRA Music Awards. And also, as Matthew knows, my brief time heading PR for Apple when they launched iTunes. And I'm the author of a book called Songwriters Speak, where I interviewed a lot of the great iconic songwriters from Australia and New Zealand. Lots of other bits and pieces, but you know, California, Los Angeles was always my mecca for music. And I used to do a radio show in Byron Bay called Debbie Does Breakfast. And I would drive our programming team crazy because I would play all this classic rock all the time. And they'd say, you sound too commercial. You sound too professional and too commercial, you know, because everyone else in Byron was being kind of grungy or electronica. And and I would start my show every week with a Chicago song and an Eagles song, and finish with Take It Easy by the Eagles, and play a lot of deep cuts from Chicago in the middle because I felt it was my duty to educate. Byron Bay listeners in Chicago. And anyway, I was always a classic rock girl, and I used to come here so often. And eventually I found out that I was eligible for one of those green cards for extraordinary ability. So I applied for one and got it and moved here nearly 4 years ago now, late 2014. And I moved, I didn't just immigrate to the United States, and I didn't just immigrate to California or LA. I actually immigrated to Santa Monica very specifically, because you just can't take me away from the beach. So here I am, and I head up to Malibu every weekend to be a girl of summer and sit on the beach, and I just love it. I love it here, and I work in, I do PR and in all different areas, music and film and various bits and pieces.
So you're living the California dream.
Well, you know, I mean, it's Trump Erica, isn't it? So it's a bit of a nightmare.
But it sounds to me, Debbie, like you've moved to Santa Monica, you're in California, you love the beach. I can't for a minute understand why you chose the album you did. Can you explain why that is?
Well, but you see, Hotel California is not about the beach so much. You have to kind of, you kind of have to fast forward to Don Henley's solo career and Boys of Summer to get to that, because he wrote that, you know, driving along PCH and sitting there at Zuma Beach and
Just a quick subtitle for non-American listeners. PCH is the Pacific Coast Highway.
Right. Excellent. And while we're on little intrusions, I'd argue, and this is for another podcast, that Boys of Summer is, if not the greatest, in the top three greatest songs written in the 80s.
I think it's the greatest song of the 80s. Another great song from the 80s to completely... You better not get me started. Funnily enough, I loved Our Lips Are Sealed by the Go-Go's, and I saw them at the Hollywood Bowl. I saw them at the Hollywood Bowl last month with an orchestra, and it was just so bizarre. I moved here for music. When people say to me, why are you here? Because it's not easy. It's really not easy to get established here. It's like, why would you leave beautiful Sydney, Australia, with that gorgeous, you know, the harbour and the opera house and the harbour bridge, and you have free national health care. Why would you leave that? And I have one very simple answer, which is it's a long drive to the Hollywood Bowl. I'm going to the Hollywood Bowl next weekend. I don't know when this is going to air, so I might have already been by then, but I'm going to see Randy Newman with the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra playing 5 decades of his albums and at the Hollywood Bowl. I mean, come on.
Yep.
You know, I saw back in May, I saw Paul Simon on his farewell tour at the Hollywood Bowl. And to be at the Greek Theatre or the Hollywood Bowl and see these legendary artists that are always playing, that is why, ladies and gentlemen, that is why I'm here.
Absolutely. And
I will put up with all the other stuff and the difficulties and the sheer nonsense of life in America to go to the Hollywood Bowl.
And, I mean, your website, Debbie, which we'll link to in the show notes, shows that you do go to the odd performance at different venues. So count up for us, how many times have you seen the Eagles or their associated members?
I'm so glad you asked that, because funnily enough, I sat here in the last half hour and did a little tally, because I thought, I wonder if they'll ask me how many times I've seen them. And believe me, I have not seen the Eagles anywhere near the number of times that diehard super fans who have always lived in America have. And two of my very best friends who run the Eagles Fast Lane, which is the top Eagles fan website and social media page online, They have seen the Eagles way more than 100 times. And I can't even tell you, I think they've seen Henley concerts maybe 60-something to maybe more. I don't know. They've seen a lot of shows. For me, I've seen the Eagles, including post-Glenn Frey, 15 and a half times.
That's not
and
true.
I,
15 and I, and a half.
Yeah, so the half is because, so the first time, I didn't see them in the 70s. I was just a little, a tiny bit too young to see them when they were in Australia in January 1976. Which is interesting because my first ever concert was the Bay City Rollers in December 1975 at the Horden Pavilion, supported by Andy Gibb. And my second ever concert was Queen doing the A Night at the Opera show at the Horden Pavilion in April 76. So really, I should have and could have gone to see the Eagles, but I didn't. And I can't say why that is. I just didn't. And but I saw them three times when they came to Australia in 95 with the Hellfreezers over tour, twice in Brisbane and once in Sydney. And then I was in LA for a year in 98, 99, and Glenn Frey was always a big golfer and he was good buddies with Tiger Woods. And Tiger used to put on this benefit called Tiger Jam. And in 1998, Glenn Frey was the headlining act for Tiger Jam here in LA at the now no longer existing Universal Amphitheatre. And Glenn invited Joe Walsh and Timothy Schmidt and I think maybe Don Felder. And then at the last minute, it was announced that Don Henley would be there. So it became an impromptu Eagles kind of thing, only maybe a few songs, but that's why I call it a half, because it wasn't an official Eagles show. They came to Australia in 2004, so I saw them a couple of times in Sydney then, and then in 2008 I flew myself to London to see three shows at the beginning of their Long Road Out of Eden world tour. And then back in Australia they were in 2010. And then when they did the History of the Eagles and Bernie Ledden joined them for that tour, I saw them at the beginning of that tour in 2013 in Vancouver and towards the end of that tour in Las Vegas once I'd moved over here, not knowing that that would be the last time I would see Glenn Frey on stage or anywhere. I've seen, you know, back in the 80s, Joe Walsh used to come to Australia a fair bit and he just party boys and everything. So I saw him a bunch of times and I saw him maybe once or twice in the 90s over here solo. I had never been to a Don Henley solo concert until I moved here because he only did his first ever solo tour of Australia early last year. So he released an album three years ago now called Cass County, a kind of country-flavoured album. And I saw him play in LA at the beginning of that tour. And then Glenn died. And I guess we'll talk about that. And I then became really, I mean, Don said, and their manager Irving Azoff said that they would never play without Glenn, so the Eagles was done. And so it became absolutely imperative for me, I felt, to see Don Henley wherever and whenever possible. And I just, you know, I kind of went into a bit of a panic and I thought, well, he seems like a healthy guy, but what if? I just can't not see him. So
yes.
I've seen Don now solo about seven times since I moved here. And I've traveled to Texas a few times for those shows as well. And in fact, a year ago, he did a 70th birthday bash concert, which was amazing because he had Stevie Nicks and Patti Smyth and Joe and Timothy as well from the Eagles. And it was a wonderful show. But then the Eagles decided that they would continue on. And so I've seen three of those shows. I've seen one in Seattle, one in Detroit, and one in Portland just a couple of months ago, a few months ago. And then they're going to do three shows here in LA next month. So all being well, you could expect me to possibly be at one or two or three of those.
and so we will move on to the album as well, but just a Bay City Rollers aside, the remaining members of the Bay City Rollers just did.
Yeah, you can't mention the Bay City Rollers and not expect it to come back up again.
That's right.
Didn't Alan Longmuir just die recently?
He did, and but the remaining members, obviously, aside from Alan, I think it might have been just Les, to be honest, just played at the Dapto Leagues Club in the last few weeks.
Dapto! Never been there. I could have told you, I got on stage and sang with Sherbet at some pretty amazing venues like, I don't know, Blacktown RSL, Bankstown Sports, Sheila's Tavern in North Sydney. But no, Dapto, I haven't been there.
No, you haven't lived. All right, so let's talk Hotel California. So a bit of, and you'll provide much better context than I, Debbie, but obviously this came at a time in 1976 where they'd had a massive amount of success. My understanding is their first greatest hits album had come out prior to recording this, and you're probably already aware of this, but apparently they had to invent the platinum status for albums based on the sales of the greatest hits album. So the pressure was on, and along came Hotel California. So do you want to draw a bit of a picture about why this was such a big album and what was going on for the Eagles at the time?
Yeah, well, interestingly, I mean, because this is pretty much about, you know, an album that's had a lot of meaning for me personally in my life, right? And you know, when you invited me to do this and choose an album, for many, many years I'd considered the Desperado album to be my favourite Eagles album. And but Hotel California is the kind of album I realised, particularly after Glenn died, that if I was stuck out on a desert island and I was only allowed to have one album for the rest of my days to listen to, it would have to be Hotel California. And it's one of those albums that gets into your bloodstream and it's just there. It's part of my very existence. And in terms of the Eagles and the context, yes, they'd had four studio albums. They'd had Eagles, Desperado, On the Border, and One of These Nights. And then they brought out Eagles, Their Greatest Hits. And that was actually my introduction to the Eagles as such, in terms of my first Eagles album. Mm. It did become, despite the people that think it was Thriller, Eagles, Their Greatest Hits did become the top-selling album of the 20th century.
Mm.
Thriller retook the spot as the top-selling 20th century album only after Michael Jackson died in 2009. But up until then, the Eagles' greatest hits had been the number one.
And the interesting thing is that if you think about it, it contains no songs from Hotel California, yeah, no songs from Long Run or anything afterwards. It was purely on the basis of those first four albums. So they were riding high, and you know, there was pretty serious. Glenn and Don were very serious songwriters, and Don obviously still is. And there's a lot of literature, there's a lot of interviews where you can read Don talking about how they wrote the songs and the work they put in, and despite the fact that they were a party band and they partied hard, They just worked it really hard. But did they know that it was going to be one of the most iconic albums of all time? Of course not. Nobody did. The Fleetwood Mac didn't know that Rumours was going to be. And if you think about other albums that came out around that time that, you know, went on to become platinum, nobody knew. It was just a really incredibly creative time. I don't even know if it's important to talk about it from a critical point of view, because there are Eagles dissenters out there. There are people that can't stand the Eagles. And in fact, I was chatting to Matthew before we did this podcast, and I referred to a review that I'd like to quote from, that Bruce Elder, who a writer I greatly respect, who, I don't know, does he still review for the Sydney Morning Herald?
He does here.
He does,
there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and some of his reviews over the years just blew my mind, for, because I would be at a show and he would review it and I'd go, oh my God, he captured that perfectly. But he wrote a review of the Eagles when they toured in 2004 that was beyond nasty. And he said, you know, they're musically excellent. You know, it's as you would expect. Everything's perfect. They're laid back to the point of, you know, barely managing to stay vertical, which is nonsense. But, you know, people will say that. But then he ended the review by saying that the sad thing was that the audience actually believed they were having a real and meaningful contemporary music experience when all the music really did was reach deep into their youth and remind them that in 1977 they had a choice between Ecstasy, Elvis Costello, the Sex Pistols, Ian Drury, and the Eagles singing New Kid in Town, and they chose the Eagles. When I read that, I swear to God, I wanted to hunt him down and shoot him. I thought, how insulting when the Eagles come and they play three shows at whatever you call that thing out at Homebush now, the, you know, the 20,000 seater, and and, you know, they play like, I don't know, 12, 15 shows around Australia to 20,000 people a night, and you insult all of them by saying the music you like is not as good as the music I like. And the fact is that the Eagles could not possibly be as big as they've been throughout their career, and this album could not have made such an impact if they weren't touching a lot of people in a meaningful way. So Hotel California came out, and the song came out, and Rolling Stone considers it to be, you know, one of the best songs of all time, certainly the best Eagles song of all time. Don has answered many questions about it, and, you know, when he's in the mood to elucidate, he says it's, you know, about the dark underbelly of American life. And you know, it was very cinematic, and it's got one of the most famous guitar duels of all time. And there's just so much iconic about the song. It almost has gone past ever needing to be discussed. It just... It's like, you know, there's that famous line at the end of Hotel California, you can check out any time, but you can never leave. And I use that a lot in life. I use it in reference to many things. And I realized recently, it's not about that I can check out any time, but I can never leave. I actually can't check out. I just cannot check out of this band and this album. So I think it's like that for a lot of people that love the Eagles, and particularly those of us that bought the album when it came out. And before we got on this call, I went to my little record cabinet, my vinyl record cabinet, because when I moved here, I went through my old vinyl and I decided to keep all the ones that were that I had originally bought in the 70s and that had great meaning for me, some of which I just kept because I love the album cover, like the Boston album. And I've still got the original Grace Brothers plastic sleeve. I keep it in my Grace Brothers plastic sleeve, my Hotel California vinyl album. It's like I, you know, the late, great Ian Shedden, who I loved very dearly. He was a really, really great friend of mine. But we agreed on almost nothing except the fact that we liked being friends. And he was also very snide about the Eagles. It's almost like this fashionable thing in Australia, if you're a music critic, to be very derisive of the Eagles. And it's a very Australian thing because you don't get that over here. The critics love the Eagles here. And, well, I say that's a generalization, but I believe that the critics do love them. And certainly when Glenn Frey died, it came a week after David Bowie, so it was a very big news month.
Yeah.
But it was a very, very, very monumental loss. And they're very revered here in America. They are considered to be America's greatest ever rock band. So the fact that they are touring today, even with Glenn gone, selling bigger venues than ever, and they're in their 70s, it says a lot about how meaningful they and their music are. And so when somebody like Bruce, comes along and makes a comment that isn't just insulting to the band, but that is insulting to the millions
of the audience
that love that band. It just really riled me.
And
really
you'll find most musicians too, even if they're not a fan of the Eagles' music, will have a lot of respect for their songwriting and musicianship.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I was never a deep fan of Tom Petty, but I was devastated when he died, and I really regretted not having gone to see him because a week before he died, he'd done a series of shows at the Hollywood Bowl. And such respect for him and the band that he played with and the legacy they left behind. We want to talk about the album, but I just feel that it's more than just the album. It's so much a part of the band and their lifespan and their legacy, and it's the centerpiece. It's like
it came at a sort of pivotal point. I mean, the Bernie Leadon had just left the band. Bernie Leadon had just left. He was the sort of country guy. Joe wanted it to be a country band. Joe Walsh, who was a rock guy, had just come in.
Yeah.
So it marked a kind of a nexus point. In a way, it's interesting that in 1976 they had those two albums. They had the greatest hits that kind of had the highlights of the Bernie Leadon years, and then Hotel California, which was the new direction of the band in a way, both hitting at the same time. Both of them hits. Both of them coming at sort of this point where they had built up a huge following, and people were kind of, I think, interested to know, okay, what do they do next?
Well, their greatest hits had been out for a while before Hotel California, I think.
Only a few months.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You probably in front of me. I thought, maybe I'm wrong, I thought it had come out in late 75. It was like a Christmas 75 thing, but I could be wrong. I just remember that it kind of coming on the back of the One of These Nights album. I used to listen to 2SM, which was the biggest radio station in Sydney, and every morning on the school bus, it'd be Take It to the Limit or Lion Eyes, and those songs were just, when their greatest hits came out, the songs just had a much longer shelf life on radio because they just kept playing them over and over and over. But what Hotel California just really, really signified was such a huge leap in the songwriting prowess of Henley and Fry, and their concerns and the things they were thinking about. And what's really interesting is that pretty much all of the songs on the album to this day have relevance, and they were so prescient. And you know, if you go and see the Eagles today, they do play quite a number of tracks off Hotel California, and they're just not dated whatsoever lyrically or musically. Don, when after Glenn died, Don reintroduced a lot of Eagles songs into his solo set, whereas previously he didn't want to play Eagles songs in his solo shows. And he would do The Last Resort, and he would do this huge preamble before it about how it was a song about manifest destiny, and he would tell the whole story of what inspired the song. And when you listen to that song now, it's as relevant today as it was then. But we can, are we going to pick some of the tracks to talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, probably just to kick off is you alluded to it briefly then, Debbie, about hearing it on the school bus, but give us an idea of when you first heard the album start to finish and it's the impact it had on you.
Well, I think, I mean, and, you know, I was a teenager at high school, but on Sydney's glorious North Shore, Killara High, give it the plug. Can't say I remember the first time I heard Hotel California on the radio, but I would have heard it on the radio first. And then I would have gone straight to Grace Brothers in Chatswood and bought the album for $5.99 or whatever it cost back in 1976. And I would have taken it home and done what I used to do in those days, which was put it on my mono record player in my bedroom and sit on the floor leaning against my bed and listen to it from start to finish, reading the liner notes meticulously. And Hotel California, the album cover and inserts were designed by Kosh, who was the leading album designer of the day, did Linda Ronstadt's albums and used the same typeface on all of them. And I would read these, you know, I was one of those kids that was always into the liner notes and who wrote the songs and who produced the songs and who were they thanking and who were these people that they were thanking. And what's really interesting is that now 40 years on, 41, 42 years on, I've met a lot of those people and I've known a lot of those people. And, for instance, John David Souther, who co-wrote New Kid in Town, has been a friend of mine for more than 20 years. But back then, as a 14-year-old child, teenager, listening to it, I don't know that I thought anything more than, oh, this is cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, it's a different thing now. If Don Henley puts out a new solo album, it is a monumental event, which is, you know, anticipated for a long time and then digested with great consideration. And in fact, I was played 5 tracks off Don's last album by somebody up at Capitol Records a few months before it came out. And I remember sitting there thinking, this is really monumental that I'm even sitting here being played these tracks. But back then, when you're a teenager, you know, playing a new record you just brought home from Grace Brothers when you went after school to buy it, you know, I don't think you put a lot of weight on it. The thing is, I was an active radio listener, not a passive radio listener, and my ear was on 2SM every waking moment that I didn't have a record on the record player, and they were playing Hotel California and New Kid in Town all the time. So, but also, you know, I was listening to If You Leave Me Now by Chicago from the Chicago 10 album, and I was listening to Frampton Comes Alive, and I was listening to Rumours, and I don't have a list of the top albums from 1976-77 on me right now, but, you know, Simple Dreams from Linda Ronstadt and whatever was coming out around then, I was listening to all of it. The Eagles was part of the mix, but I knew that they and Chicago and Queen were my favourite bands and still are, and I knew how important it was. And it didn't get played on television exactly when Hotel California came out, but it's now part of the history of the Eagles DVD set that you can get, which is some live footage from a show. I think it was in Washington, D.C., where they previewed a bunch of the songs from Hotel California. And I do remember seeing and it was a film clip because it was filmed. It wasn't a video clip. I remember seeing the film clip of Hotel California on maybe Countdown, but probably more Sound Unlimited, Sounds, Donny Sutherland's show on a Saturday morning. Mm. And maybe on Flashes on ABC in the afternoon. I remember that sticking in my mind, and it was really the first time that you got to see if you hadn't seen them in January 76 when they came to Australia, it was the first time an Aussie kid got to see the Eagles on TV or anything. And I remember thinking how magical that film clip was. And years later, do you remember when MTV came to Australia and it was just a few hours and Richard Wilkins and Joyce Smithers were co-hosting, and I was a journalist for Variety, and they used to call me every week for the top 10 films. And one week I think it was Dickie called me, Richard Wilkins called me, and I said, can you do me a favor? Can you play something for me on MTV this week? And can you find that Eagles Hotel California clip? And they did. And they dedicated it to me. And that was, you know, 10 years later than when it had come out. Now you get to see that clip constantly.
Mm.
But back then it was really rare to see it. So to go back to your point, at the time, 76, 77, it came, it made an impression, the songs stuck with me. And I played a little bit of piano and I bought the songbooks for their greatest hits and Hotel California. And I took them home and I taught myself a little bit of Desperado, the song, and a little bit of Wasted Time Reprise or Reprise, depending on which accent you want to say it in, because they were real piano tunes. And I still have those songbooks as well. All I know is when I look back that the music made a very, very deep impression on me that was never going to be, I was never going to get over it.
Mm.
But I didn't know that at the time, because who knew that the Eagles would still be playing 40-something years later? You know,
The Eagles certainly didn't.
Well, no, because they used to, you know, all those guys used to joke, well, we won't still be playing in our 40s, you know. And Don just turned 71. If they still can, then they will. I mean, Paul McCartney is still out there performing and it's a whole new world. We didn't know in the 70s that these guys, if they could stay healthy and active, that they would still want to go out there and play and charge us hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And send
and,
us
all and we'll pay it. That's the thing.
Absolutely.
And send us all bankrupt. Exactly. And that's a whole other podcast subject, surge pricing on Ticketmaster.
Mm.
But anyway, won't go there. It made an impact on me. It never went away. When their next album, The Long Run, came out, it was a very important thing, and that's a whole other subject. And when the band broke up, I was really upset. But Hotel California never, ever, ever went away. And it really is.
It's arguable, isn't it, that Hotel California was as well as being sort of the first step in the new direction that they were taking after sort of leaving behind country rock roots. It was the beginning of the end for the band, because it set a kind of high watermark for them in terms of songwriting, in terms of the performance, and in terms of commercial impact, that it was going to be very, very hard for them to match or to top. In a lot of ways, you know, the Long Run, they went into recording The Long Run with a plan to make a double album. It was very, very ambitious. And you know, immediately they kind of realized that they weren't going to be able to reach quite the goal that they'd gone for in trying to top Hotel California, and they never quite managed it, did they?
Well, I think they knew that they couldn't top it. And, you know, when Glenn died, Rolling Stone put out a special edition, Eagles, The Ultimate Guide, and Don was very involved in doing interviews for it. And he goes through, he does a Q&A on every album. And when he talks about The Long Run, he says that, you know, they were completely burnt out when they began recording Long Run. They were physically, emotionally, spiritually, and creatively exhausted. Their tank was empty. They'd been touring relentlessly. And they were in a pretty dark place, despite the success they had. They knew that they'd reached their creative peak as a band together, and they were driving each other mad. But having said that, The Long Run has some beautiful songs on it. But Hotel California, you know, I don't even know that they consciously thought, we are now going in a new direction because we've lost Bernie Ledden and we've got Joe Walsh. I think in those days things just moved along organically, and Don and Glenn had just reached a point where their songwriting had become very, very... Sorry, there's like a low-flying...
Are you being attacked by a helicopter at this point?
There's a low-flying aircraft going outside my window here. I hate speaking on behalf of them in that way because I adore them and I write about them on my blog a lot, but I always keep my writing very personal and make it about my feelings, my impressions, my experiences, because if I was asked to sit down and actually write a critique of the Eagles albums, I would sit down and do that very studiously. But when I kind of converse and write about them, it's very much, this is my experience. So, because I think Don and Glenn have both spoken so much about their experience of writing it. But they, Don is a lyricist. I mean, it's musical, but he's, you know, he's a literate intellectual who loves words. And he's very specific. After his birthday concert in Dallas last year in July, the following day he did a very intimate Q&A for a bunch of people, a bunch of fans. And he said that, you know, he would often get people writing saying, you know, the line, she's got the Mercedes-Benz. And they would say, you've spelt it wrong. Mercedes-Benz is, you know, with a Z, B-E-N-Z. And he'd,
oh, dear. Ever heard of a pun, people?
No, but he wasn't punning. He was talking about the curves on a woman, you know. Well, yes, I guess it was a pun because of the Mercedes, but he was very specific about wanting to describe, you know, a classy-looking woman with curves. And he gets frustrated when people don't understand his intentions. So, but Hotel California is a very cinematic song. And, you know, as soon as it opens with, you know, on a dark desert highway, you kind of, you have a picture of it.
Then, you know, on a dark desert highway, cool wind in my hair, that, you know, so far I'm right there with you. Then it says warm smell of colitis. And you think, what the hell is that?
something Mexican, probably. I mean,
apparently it's a slang term for marijuana.
It
means little tails, but apparently that's colloquially used to mean like buds.
See, okay. I have friends that would know so much more about the meaning of every lyric than me. It's interesting when I hear a song for the first time that I love the sound of, I usually am responding to the melody.
Mm-hmm.
And the vocals and the feel of the song. And it can be sometimes years before I really pay more than a cursory kind of attention to the lyrics and the meaning, even if I've sat there as a 14-year-old and read them and read them and read them and read them.
Yeah,
and sung them.
And that's a very common thing, I know, as a musician myself and talking to a lot of musicians. If you play an instrument and vocals to you are secondary, I could barely tell you more than six full sets of lyrics from the last 40 years, but could, you know, rattle off most melodies, harmonies and chord structures.
And yet I know every word to every Eagles song, every word to every Eagles song. They're just implanted in my head. I think that the song Hotel California is a masterpiece. My favorite Eagles song of all time is actually Desperado, but I think that Hotel California, it's a song I never get tired of. If it comes on the radio, I don't switch the station. And yet there was...
Even though you know you're committing for the next 7 minutes.
Absolutely. Well, it's the same thing with Bohemian Rhapsody. It's like Sirius XM is a satellite radio network here in the United States, and... From Thanksgiving last year until late January, they devoted a channel to, like, they had an Eagles channel, you know, and it was basically to promote their new tour that they were putting tickets on sale for. And we Eagles fans just lapped it up. I listened to it. I was in my car a lot over those months, and I listened to it over and over and over. And there were certain songs that would come on that I would be like, oh, I could live without hearing that one again for a while. But Hotel California is never one of those songs that I don't want to hear again. I love it.
So, and Don Felder obviously wrote the music to that, with Henley and Fry doing the lyrics.
I'm just gonna clarify, qualify that. The fact is that Don Felder, and the story is told in several places, Felder was always making up riffs and little melody lines and putting them on cassette tapes and sending them to Don and Glenn. And most of the time they never heard anything they liked. But Don did like this particular one and thought we might be able to do something with that. Felder didn't sit down and write the music for the whole song. And it's a really important distinction, because people think he did. No, he came up with that guitar riff, and certainly in the studio when he and Joe Walsh did the guitar duet at the end, that was, you know, very much kind of put together with their producer, Bill Simcic, in the studio. But Felder didn't write the melody of the whole song, and it was very much Don and Glenn who wrote that song. People say there would be no Hotel California without Don Felder. Well, there would have been something very close, because Don and Glenn would have come up with something. Sure, the guitar bits that Felder contributed definitely inspired the song.
And some would argue that Jethro Tull fully inspired that music in the first place.
What?
That's very, very arguable.
Yeah, I've listened to it. So basically, Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull made the argument, I believe, not long after its release, that it resembles a song of his. I've listened to his song, and
it resembles the chord progression. I
it
mean,
does.
Come on.
It absolutely resembles a chord progression. But Ian Anderson himself
is in a different key.
From what song?
Oh, now you're testing me. I don't have it in front of me. I could tell you which one it is.
I don't know about that.
If
you listen to the Jethro Tull song, and I can't remember which song it is off the top of my head either. That's the one, yes. Then if you listen to it with Hotel California in your head, then yeah, you can sort of think, hey, this sounds a little bit familiar. But otherwise, you know, you have to want it, basically.
Yeah, it's and Ian Anderson himself has been very open on it, that he agrees it's a different key, different tempo, whatever. It's really just the progression. But yeah,
different melody, totally different song. It's just the same chord progression, or similar chord progression.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, if you say so. I just think that, you know, Don Felder was an integral part of the band in those days, and a brilliant guitar player. Don Henley to this day acknowledges what a fine guitar player Don Felder was. He wasn't a brilliant songwriter, and his contributions were significant, but not the be-all and end-all. That's all I'll say on that. But, you know, a beautiful song. Obviously it's one of the main songs that they play in the encore of any Eagles concert. I sometimes wonder how Don can bear to sing it yet again. And he said for many years, he has a high tolerance for repetition. So he doesn't mind singing his songs over and over and over. And obviously the song is very meaningful to him also. And in fact, all the songs he wrote with Glenn Frey are very meaningful to him. But what's really wonderful is that when you're a diehard fan and you go and see a lot of shows and you're in an audience and you know that there are people that have maybe never seen the Eagles before or have only seen them maybe once before. And when I last saw them in Portland in May, I was sitting next to a 29-year-old guy called Ryan, and it was his first ever Eagles show. And I was so excited for him. And when they start playing the opening guitar chords from Hotel California and you see the face of somebody that's never seen them live before, it's really, really a beautiful thing. And I think that's what keeps Don Henley and his bandmates inspired to want to keep singing it night after night.
Absolutely. Believe it or not, too, beyond that first song, there's a bit of an album after that. So what, for you, Debbie, were the key tracks that really, I mean, I'm guessing you like them all, but what are some of the standouts for you that you if you...
Well, I love New Kid in Town. I mean, anything Glenn sang, he had such a beautiful voice. And it's just such a beautiful song with a really bittersweet story behind it. And it was co-written with John David Souther, who is a fabulous lyricist.
There's talk on the street, it sounds so familiar. Great expectations. Everybody's watching you.
What's really interesting, and again, it's like I heard it at the time, I loved it, the song was on the radio, you know, notwithstanding Bruce Elder's feeling that hearing, you know, loving that song means that I didn't have any meaningful experiences in my life. The song has continued to have meaning, and its meaning now is really quite profound because it's now sung on stage by Vince Gill, the great country singer-songwriter and guitarist who plays with the Eagles now. And Vince sings it, but it's also a tribute to Glenn's son, Deacon Frey, who is performing with them also. And it's very difficult for me and a lot of my friends to listen to any Eagles song and not listen to it in the context of the whole 40-something years and not just think about when the album came out and when the song was a hit. Do you know what I'm getting at? It's a much bigger story. And I think more so than for a lot of other artists and bands who've kept playing their music over the years. I mean, if you go and see Fleetwood Mac, particularly this year, without Lindsey Buckingham, with Neil Finn, which is going to be interesting, and they play Go Your Own Way, for instance. And, you know, it's a song that Lindsey wrote about the end of his relationship with Stevie Nicks. And you, whenever they play it, that's what you think of. It doesn't really have any meaning outside of that context other than the fact that it's, you know, a popular song that people that still enjoy listening to and singing to. But the Eagles songs seem to, certainly for me and a lot of people I know, they seem to keep redefining themselves over time in a way that the songwriters and fans could not possibly have predicted. And certainly for some of these songs, seeing them, hearing them on stage performed by the band as they are today with Vince Gill singing New Kid in Town, and Deacon Frey on stage singing some of the songs that his dad had sung. It's a whole new story being told around an old story.
Yeah, and Will Henley's part of the band as well now, isn't he, on tour?
Will has been... I don't want to demean his contribution. He's been serving a kind of apprenticeship, if you like. He's been playing some rhythm guitar right at the end, sort of side of the stage behind Vince Gill and in the dark without being in any way introduced to the audience. And a lot of people in the audience wouldn't have a clue who this other guy on stage is, because there's a lot of guitarists on that stage. But yes, he's not singing, and from because it was never formed, like when they decided to continue on and do the classic East and classic West shows last year and then go on and do a tour, they did interviews about Deacon joining the band and Vince Gill joining the band, but the whole Will thing is just kind of like he graduated from high school, he took a year off, he did some travel with his dad, and then his dad decided to bring him on the road for the summer. And he's supposedly going to college. So I hope he'll still be on stage with them in LA next month, because it's fun to watch him. It's really fun to watch him, kind of stand there with 20,000 people or more if he's in a stadium. They played in Dallas to about 80,000 people recently. And just watching this kid on stage, he's a new kid in town, if you like.
I see what you did there.
It must be very daunting for him, and he's just sort of standing there doing it, you know. But a lot of the attention on stage is with Deacon. There's a huge, there's so much emotional, there's so much love from the audience to Deacon Frey. And it just astounds me how he stands there and is so poised and humble and brilliant. He really is very good up there. He's really, really good doing his father proud. It's something that I don't know that a lot of bands would have been able to get away with. But what I realized about the Eagles after I accepted that they were going to go on is that Don Henley won't allow anything to happen on that stage that he doesn't think is as close to perfect as it can be.
Yeah. And I think I don't, there's probably no link whatsoever, but I think what Springsteen pulled off with Jake Clemens after Clarence Clemens gave a bit of a template, and even with George Harrison's, to some extent, just it can work and it can work really well.
Yeah, and Jason Bonham. It's just that Deacon is up front, center stage singing. And, Glenn was the leader of the band. What the Eagles are lacking now in their stage performance is a real master of ceremonies, somebody who links it all together, who I think, have we lost Matthew?
I'm back.
Okay. You can edit this out, right? What we've lost is that master of ceremonies who links it all together, who tells jokes, who Glenn was very, very comfortable being the leader of the band, and Don is less comfortable. So there's less stage patter. But what you get is a lot of music. New Kid in Town is everything that Vince Gill sings with the band is sung beautifully, Take It to the Limit and Lion Eyes. But New Kid in Town, he does it very beautifully. And I loved the song in its day, and I love it a lot now. In terms of other songs, I really love Waste of Time and its reprise. On the beginning of side two, if you turn the vinyl over,
that's something that's kind of lost, sort of post vinyl, isn't it? The song finished side A with Wasted Time, and then opened side B with an instrumental reprise of it. Of course, on the digital download or the CD or whatever, it just goes straight from the song into a reprise. Really?
Yeah.
Is this how it works? Isn't there supposed to be something in between? Well, yeah, there is. You're supposed to flip the album over.
Yeah. I've always felt, I've long felt that Don's best songs for the Eagles, my favorite songs that Don Henley wrote for the Eagles, were Desperado, which he wrote with Glenn, Waste of Time, which was a very personal lyric for him about the end of a relationship, and a song from the Long Road Out of Eden album from 10 years ago called Waiting in the Weeds, which if you've never listened to, please, after this, go and listen to Waiting in the Weeds. It's one of the most magnificent pieces of songwriting ever. And Waste of Time did strike me in its day as a really, really beautiful song that I couldn't possibly at the age of 14 have understood the full weight of. But I love it much more than, say, Life in the Fast Lane, which is one of the Eagles songs that I could quite happily not hear again for a long time. I'm kind of bored with that song. I feel that it's not one of the best opportunities for Don's vocal to shine. It's a screaming rock and roll song, but people love the guitar riff. They love it. And they love the fact that the title is a line that has become part of the vernacular, you know, Life in the Fast Lane. And Glenn tells the great story on the History of the Eagles documentary about where he got that title from, which was that he was riding around in a fast car with some drug dealer guy or something, and the guy was driving really, really, really fast. And Glenn said, "Whoa, what are you doing?" He said, "Man, it's Life in the Fast Lane." And that literally happened. So, but I love Waste of Time. I love it, love it, love it. It's beautiful. And Don was doing it on his solo, in his solo shows, before the Eagles started playing again last year. He had, and still does, if he does any solo shows, three amazing female backing singers, and he actually did it as a duet with one of them, which I wasn't as keen on because I really like the integrity of the original, but I figured that it was mainly because Don's voice gets tired when he's doing a long show on his own. And sometimes he looks for ways to give himself some relief on stage. But I do love Waste of Time. I think it's one of the most beautiful reflections on the end of a relationship in any song. And then A Victim of Love, I can take it or leave it these days, mainly because of the story behind how Don Felder had co-written it and wanted to sing it. He demanded that he have a lead vocal on that album, and he had a go at it, and he did a pretty ordinary job. So I think it was Irving Azoff took him out for dinner, and while they were out to dinner, Henley re-recorded it. And so Felder was a bit pissed about that.
Yeah, that seems, I've read that story, and that seems like an odd thing. I mean, did they think they could re-record the vocal and he wouldn't find out? I mean, why the subterfuge?
Oh, no. Well, just rather than tell him up front and have him throw a tantrum, they just wanted to get it done first before he threw the tantrum. But, you know, it's talked about in detail on the History of the Eagles documentary, but I've seen Don Felder play live since I've moved here to LA. He supported the Doobie Brothers on a tour a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was a really curious experience because he would play all these Eagles songs, some of which he had no involvement in writing, and even some that were recorded before he was in the band. And then he would make little jokes and call them the Beagles and, oh, you know, when I was in that band and all this stuff, which is, you know, whatever. He's a great guitar player, but he's not a lead vocalist. He's just not. I'll say that on the record. So, you know,
in fairness, I mean, Desperado has become a staple of Joe Walsh solo shows as well, and he had nothing to do with that one.
Has it?
Yes.
Oh, well, I think Don likes Joe and just lets him, gives him a pass on those sorts of things. But Desperado's a whole, I could do a whole podcast just on that song. Desperado, Don, you know, it's always the finale and Don gives it everything he's got. At the end of 2016, there was a beautiful concert put on here in LA called A Tribute to the Music of Linda Ronstadt. As you probably know, Linda has Parkinson's and can't sing anymore. And they put on a bunch of her music friends put on a concert singing the songs that she made famous and to raise money for Parkinson's. And although he wasn't announced on the lineup, I was absolutely sure Don would come and sing Desperado, which, you know, Linda's version of really popularized the song because it had never been released as a single. It wasn't like it was a hit song in its day. So, yeah, that song has a lot of weight and a lot of meaning and that whole album does. So, you know, once you've done like 100 other guests and you want to come back to me for another podcast one day, we'll do the Desperado album. But but in terms of this album, yeah, Pretty Maids All in a Row is a really beautiful Joe Walsh song. Interestingly, recently on Instagram, Deacon Fry, who has such a funny persona on social media, posted a screenshot of Pretty Maids All in a Row playing on his, I don't know, Spotify or whatever his playlist is. And he said, you know, to all the homies that have asked what my favorite Eagles song is, it's this one. And I thought that was really interesting that it was a Joe Walsh vocal and not one of his dad's songs. I've seen Joe do it in solo shows and it's very affecting. It's a really, really pretty song. They don't do it live at the moment, but I wish they did. They do a lot of Joe Walsh solo stuff like Rocky Mountain Way and, you know, Funk Number 49 and Walk Away. A lot of James Gang and Joe Walsh stuff, and us Don Henley fans kind of go, why are we hearing so much Joe stuff? But they don't do Pretty Maids All in a Row, and I wish if they want more Joe vocals that they would actually sing that song. And then they had to have a Randy Meisner vocal, so they had Try and Love Again, and that was really Randy's swan song with the band. Mm-hmm. Because he was just getting really fed up with going on the road and singing Take It to the Limit night after night, but it's a pretty song. Mm. And then The Last Resort, which I mentioned before, is a really, really beautiful song. And Don has told the story often about how he was hanging out in Aspen one summer and met this gorgeous young woman who was an immigrant from the Czech Republic, and her family had fled the communist regime and settled in Providence, Rhode Island. And then she inherited some money from a grandparent, a grandmother, and decided to head west like the pioneers did, and ended up in Colorado and bought a rundown old cabin, which Don said he very graciously helped her fix up. And he was very impressed with her story and the whole idea of that sort of migration west and how that led to so much development and overdevelopment. And so, yeah, he likes to say it's a song about manifest destiny because he doesn't take his work lightly. He takes his work very seriously, and he likes when he introduces a song on stage, he likes it if you actually listen to what he has to say about it.
Yeah. Now, I've read that he has said that The Last Resort was not really fully realized. Do you know what he sort of means by that?
Well, possibly. I mean, it's a long song to end an album with, but then they also end the long run with Sad Cafe, which is a similarly wistful kind of thing. I don't know specifically about that song not being fully realised. I know that Don has felt that a lot of his songs could have been better and could have been worked on more, and he has said that he's admitted that he will work on a song for years if allowed, and people have to stop him. He has to be stopped and let it go. So I don't know. I mean, you know, it's really interesting because he has said that he has never been happy with the recording of Desperado, the song. And he's told the story several times in my earshot about how it was recorded with the London Symphony Orchestra behind him, and he was very nervous, and the orchestra players were very bored, and they were sitting around playing chess between takes and grumbling things like, "I don't feel like a desperado," and really kind of being very kind of dismissive of them. And Don said that, you know, Glyn Johns, their then producer, would only let him do three takes and then said it's fine, and he didn't feel it was fine. And I feel that it's perfect because I'm the listener who has absorbed that song as it was recorded into my life, into my existence. And similarly with everything on Hotel California, to me, it's perfect exactly as it is. And they did work hard on the album, and then they performed those songs over and over and over, not just to tour that album, but basically for the rest of their days. They have performed many of the songs from the Hotel California album. As far as The Last Resort itself not being fully realized, I'm not sure. I guess he just kind of, you know, let it go at some stage. In this Rolling Stone guide, they actually list the top 40 Eagles songs, and number 27 is Last Resort, which it says it took the track itself took 7 months to complete. Glenn Frey referred to it as Henley's opus, a meditation on environmental degradation and the slaughter wrought in the name of manifest destiny. Don says, "I'd been reading articles and doing research about the raping and pillaging of the West by mining timber, oil and cattle interests, but I was interested in an even larger scope for the song, so I tried to go Michener with it. He was never totally happy with the result musically, but producer Bill Simcic feels its power rivals Hotel California itself." And it is a case of the Hotel California song and then The Last Resort topping and tailing this grand master artwork that the Hotel California is. And in spite of its commercial, it's monumental commercial success and the criticism and derision that it's received because it was so big, the fact is that Hotel California is a great work of art. And the song, you know, it's been sent off on space shuttles, on satellites, rotating the Earth. Don tells this great story about doing some charity work and going on a mission to Honduras with a bunch of people and going to the most remote village possible on the top of a huge hill, and where nobody even spoke English, and this native with a big boombox coming over to Don and pointing at him and saying, "You," and then pointing at the cassette player. And it turned out that in the cassette player was a cassette tape of Hotel California, you know, in remote Honduras. So the song, you know, it will live on way beyond the people behind it. And that's, I think, for Don, and I think for Glenn when he was alive, is what really mattered to them. And it's why Don decided to keep going with the Eagles, because he believes that the songs matter more than anybody and that the people want the songs. So he would rather be out there delivering the songs himself than having cover bands and tribute bands who he hates.
Excellent.
So I'm intrigued by this. I'm intrigued that he hates cover bands. I mean, it's extra money that he doesn't have to do anything for.
He hates any covers of his songs, and except
even the Gypsy Kings.
I don't think he particularly likes it. I'm not sure. But here's something I don't know if you're aware of, but there is been in the works for some time, and it was Glenn's pet project before he died, but there is a Hotel California Broadway musical. And I'm kind of skeptical because I love ABBA as much as anyone, but I never went to see the Mamma Mia musical on stage, and I've never been to see We Will Rock You, even though I love the songs of Queen. I just like hearing Queen perform them. So I'm kind of skeptical, but I think Glenn's strategy was simply that one day we won't be able to perform on stage anymore. So let's, you know, create something that will continue to bring in the live performance royalties. Mm. And let's control it rather than let somebody else go out there and do it.
It is something that separates the singer songwriters from the performers, isn't it? I mean, you write a song and it's your song forever, even if it's not you performing it. Whereas you have a big hit with a song that somebody else wrote. Well, eventually somebody else is going to do a version that's better than yours. You know, there's a lot to be said for singer songwriters.
Absolutely.
Well, there is.
And I'd like to thank Glenn Frey particularly for his work on Hotel California, so that it meant that the Venger Boys didn't go out on the space shuttle. So that alone is an important point. And just for the statistic nerds before we wrap up too, Debbie, Hotel California, the album, is the 18th. I was just looking up biggest selling album of all time. Obviously, the greatest hit's been number two now. Just ahead of Hootie and the Blowfish's Cracked Rear View.
That's so sad.
I thought you'd like that.
But, you know,
but,
I do...
But it's Hootie. Everybody loves Hootie.
No, I don't. I do want to say, and I'm quite unashamed about this, it is my truth. Everyone's got their, you know, their artist that has been lost and whose loss devastated them. And for many, many people, it's the John Lennon thing. I remember where I was when I heard John Lennon died, but I wasn't the Beatles devotee that other people were. I adored Freddie Mercury and I miss him every day, but I had never experienced anything like the grief that I felt when Glenn died, other than when I lost my parents. Like it felt that intense to me, and it felt that intense for a long, long time. And I was working at the time in a PR agency in West Hollywood, around the corner from the Troubadour Club. And the Troubadour was where Glenn and Don met, and where they, you know, agreed to go on the road and play with Linda Ronstadt's band. It's where all those musicians first met. And the Troubadour put up a sign outside on their neon sign saying, you know, RIP Glenn Frey. And I drove past that on my way home every night while it was up there for a couple of weeks. And I will also say my best friend in LA is a legendary rock photographer by the name of Henry Diltz, who shot the album covers for the first two Eagles albums and shot a lot of iconic images of the Eagles over the years. And Henry's about to turn 80. He's very spiritual and he's very philosophical, and he believes that when somebody dies, and many, many of his dear friends in music have gone, he says that they've gone to the other side, and he thinks it's great because they're somewhere where they're happy. But when Glenn died, Henry and I had dinner across the restaurant across the road from the Troubadour, actually. And he said, you know, I'm finding this one really hard. This is hard to accept. It's Glenn, and he's really the first one of that crowd, and I'm not finding it as easy to accept. And that really struck me. I have friends that couldn't listen to any Eagles or Glenn for a long, long time. I was the opposite. I couldn't listen to anything but for a long, long time. And I just listened to Eagles and Glenn solo stuff all the time, all the time, all the time. And I was very teary for a long time. And I know that sounds kind of obsessive, but sometimes you don't know how important somebody is in your existence until that happens.
Mm.
So Hotel California, the album, then became more important to me than ever. And it's why I chose the album to talk about, because since Glenn died, I've realized more than ever that it is the most important album in my world. It just is.
And Debbie, I think it's fair to say we're glad you chose the album. It's been a great discussion, and one certainly that took us down roads I wasn't expecting. As you said at the start, it is an album that is probably been overanalyzed, and you've put a real new spin on it. So thank you.
Well, thank you for inviting me and for being so supportive of my choice, which, you know, is a very commercial choice. But like I said, I can't ever check out, let alone leave. I just can't.
She packed her hopes and dreams like a refugee, just as her father came across the sea. She heard about a place people were smiling. They spoke about the
rain. So there we have it. That was one passionate person about the Eagles, Matthew.
There has to be one, hasn't there? Yes. Now, look, I joke, but no. I think Debbie's love of the Eagles, lifelong love of the Eagles, comes across there, and I don't think she's alone. No. I think the Eagles maybe get a bit of a rough trot from the too cool for school crowd.
They do,
but it's good to see somebody who's unashamed to be passionate about what they're passionate about.
Agreed, totally.
That's the thing with this show. It's not about, you know, do you like the same thing everybody else likes? It's how passionate are you? How has this album changed your life? How has this album affected you? And I think, you know, what we've just had is kind of the perfect guest, really. We've got somebody who's heard an album and it's had an incredible impact. It's changed, you know, she lives in California now.
That's
Sydney,
right.
Sydney girl, Kalara High. And now here she is going to concerts at the Hollywood Bowl and going up to Malibu for the weekend, that kind of thing. I mean, the Eagles have changed her.
And I think the impact of the Eagles are undeniable. Even, like, I'm a fan as far as I love their music, but I'm not obviously a fan of the level of passion of Debbie. But for me, and I'm sorry, Don, if you're listening to this, but I've been in cover bands since I was 17. And the reason I got into my first cover band was because I saw two guys at a talent quest, a drummer and a guitar player that I'm friends with to this day, get up and play Heartache Tonight, and they sounded amazing. And I ended up joining them as part of a wider band, and we played Heartache Tonight many times. We played Greeks Don't Want No Freaks, and we also played one of Don's solo songs, Man With A Mission. Did it for years, and every other band I've been in since, you cannot avoid an Eagles song in the repertoire, and no issue with that whatsoever. So sorry, Don, if you don't like covers bands, I'm one of those evil people.
Oh, dear.
But we always paid our performing rights, I can assure you. Maybe not as a 17-year-old. Yes.
He might come at you for back pay now.
Back pay. Well, if it's any, Don, if you are still listening, we actually didn't get paid ourselves, so you're not going to get much.
So, okay, so you can have a percentage, Don.
That's right. You can have a percentage of the cut for sure. So, yes, there we have it. So, as always, we'll be back, I won't say in a month.
No, that's probably not in a month, but yeah. Couple of weeks, tops.
We do have a couple of other guests on the boil. What we find is, and this wasn't the case with Debbie, but we do find with some guests that their schedules, particularly if they're working musicians or other traveling professionals, yeah, we do have a bit of a struggle nailing down. And in the past week, we've had that exact issue with someone else. So yeah, do bear with us, but we do love doing it, and we'll be back. Anything else you want to add, Matthew, before we get out of here?
Are we going to get out of here? I thought we could never leave.
At least you haven't mentioned female entomologists, so that's
good. You did. I was not gonna. You brought it up. I was gonna leave it.
That's right. Oh, sorry. I do need to say a big thank you to Paul Bindig for last episode too. So him and I have been keeping in touch, and they're currently touring around Australia in all different regional locations. So if you haven't already, Echoes of Pink Floyd seem to be drawing some big crowds. So well done to them. They're very prolific on Instagram and Facebook too. Some great pictures they post. So we'll leave it there then. So if you'd like to offer an opinion yourself or a suggestion or even offer yourself up as a guest to review an album you love, please
do. If you're a female entomologist.
Oh, I see. You got it in. Feel free to email us at contact@themusicweek.net or visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/musicdissectors. I say this every episode. We do like to keep things spread well amongst the decades. So if you have an album from the 80s, 90s or 2000s, we'd especially love to hear from you. Given that last album was 1977 and this episode was 1976, we're in a pretty tight range. You'll find previous episodes of the show on
iTunes. This album was timeless. Hotel California belongs to all time.
That's true. I might put that on there. 1976 to 2018. Previous episodes of the show are definitely on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher and TuneIn, and all episodes are, as always, on our website at www.themusicweek.net. So thank you very much again for listening if you've gotten this far, and thank you again, Matthew.
Thank you.
So we'll be back.
And thanks again, Debbie.
Yes, thank you, Debbie. Much appreciated. So we'll be back in a few weeks or months, definitely not years. In the meantime, find a new album to love.